Live on DAZN Worldwide, May 2nd and 3rd, Garcia versus Romero and Canelo versus Skull. Friday from 6 p.m. Eastern, Garcia returns in a history-making Times Square takeover. 24 hours later, Saturday from 7 p.m. Eastern, King Canelo faces undefeated Skull for the undisputed crown. May 2nd and 3rd, a knockout weekend of boxing. Pick one or go all in for only $90 exclusively on DAZN. Buy now at DAZN.com/boxing.
Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
9:20 again. You can hear more of J.P. Morrell talking about the trash contract with Newell Norman, both of them lawyers, and you can get down to it, pardon the pun, the heart of the matter at 12:10. That's one of my favorite songs. The more I know, the less I understand all the things I thought I knew. I'm learning it again. Those are Don Henley's lyrics, and if I'd have told you 2 weeks ago, look, we're going to find out about Derek Carr's shoulder injury from Derek, but it'll be while he's preaching a sermon at church, you would have said, Tucker, enough drinking. It's time to dry out. But that's pretty much what happened. With that, we welcome in Jeff Nowak, WWL Saints sideline reporter. How you doing, Jeff?
Hey, Tommy. How you doing?
I'm all right. I guess we did find out from Derek Carr about his shoulder injury at church in Las Vegas.
Yeah, sorry, you're cutting out a little bit. Can you repeat that question?
I say, so we found out about Derek Carr's shoulder injury in Las Vegas when he was preaching at church.
Well, you know, we knew about it, right? So it's more so that he's confirming that it exists, which, you know, I don't think he felt like he should have to do. But, yeah, it was weird because, you know, you watch him talk in that setting, and he's talking to the people standing in front of him, mm-hmm. or sitting in front of him, rather. But it's very much something directed at, you know, a much larger audience because he's smart enough to know that that's mm-hmm. going to be seen and shared. And, you know, he talked about some lady on a podcast, which, you know, Diana Rossini is who he's referring to. She hosts a podcast called Scoop City with Chase Daniel. And, you know, I wouldn't say that she kind of came out and said that she didn't believe the injury was real, but she heavily implied that there was more to it than was being shared. I think it would be hilarious if she changed her Twitter bio to some lady on a podcast, personally. I mm-hmm. think she would win the internet for the day if she did that. But, no, and so, you know, he talked about a lot. You know, he said that, you know, he's had a very tumultuous off season. You know, he shared some intimate details of a trip they took where they all got sick and, you know, his wife, they had to rush her to the burn unit because of a weird explosion at home. And mm-hmm. then, you know, they found out later that she had a miscarriage. They didn't know she was pregnant. And that was around the time that he was supposed to come to New Orleans. That's the details he shared. So obviously you feel for the family. It's a tragic situation, traumatic situation, anytime something like that happens. So, you know, your thoughts and prayers are with them. But, you know, it's just another kind of episode of the off-season soap opera that is Derek Carr and the Saints, because it's anything but normal. It is a complicated, complex situation seemingly at all times. There are a few answers. The Saints haven't really come out and said anything. I think they're hoping to get more information so that when they talk about the situation at length, they are able to do so from a place of, hey, we have answers for you. We're not presenting more and more questions. And especially in the build up to the draft, they didn't want that to be the case. So, you know, we'll see what happens. I still think surgery is probably the most likely outcome when you're talking about a 34-year-old quarterback. I think the question is going to end up being, hey, do you want to have surgery and fix this issue? Do you want to try to play through it? We don't know what that's going to look like. Do we want to rehab it without surgery? So, you know, I think this is all going to kind of come to a head in the next few weeks or so. The Saints are going to be on the field for their rookie mini camp. in mid-May. They have OTAs starting, a few weeks after that. So the first time Derek has to be here, in terms of it's mandatory, is the veteran minicamp in June. So I think by that point, by June 20th or whatever, I don't have the exact date in front of me. I have a feeling we'll have an idea one way or the other of where exactly he stands.
And my thoughts are, I feel for him and his family, but looking at moving forward, you got to play with who you have, not who you don't have. And
right.
Along those lines, let's go through the Saints draft, if we will. You can talk about Kevin Banks, and we'll get to Tyler Shuck.
Well, which one do you want to talk about? Let's talk about both?
Start with Kevin Banks. Just real quick, a recap, and then we'll get to Tyler Shuck.
Well, first, Kelvin. He'll get mad if you call him Kevin. We learned that with Kelvin Sampson, the coach for Houston.
I'm just reading what they gave me here. Is his name Kevin or Kelvin?
Kelvin, like the temperature. And it's interesting. We had Archie Manning on yesterday, and he has some insight into Kelvin because Kelvin was the left tackle at Texas. And, Arch Manning didn't play a ton last year, but when he did, he spoke very, very highly of Kelvin, said when he was the best person in that locker room, independent of football, just from a character perspective. And, that's what we heard a lot of from people who know him, from the coaching staff that, scouted him, is, you're adding a very, very high character, high quality person. And, I get it. Every time you go into the draft, there's so many exciting names, especially when you're drafting in the top 10. You kind of have all these visions of, wow, what if we added this stud wide receiver, this stud running back, or, the super exciting tight end. And then you end up with an offensive lineman, and it's like, there's no highlight reels of offensive linemen I can go gush over and get excited about. But then you kind of take a step back and you say, how do you win at the NFL
level? Yeah, when it's game day and you need to run the ball for 5 minutes, forget the highlights. Yeah. That's what I want to see.
Right. And it's easy to forget. This time last year, we were all panicking about, can Trevor Penning play right tackle or left tackle? Do you have to have a tackle? And now, instead of that question, you have a guy you drafted last year and feel great about in Taliesin Fuaga, who you could play, either keep him at the left side or move him back to his natural position of right tackle. And then you have this stud tackle who you probably want to play at left tackle in Kelvin Banks. And your only real question is, do we move Trevor Penning into guard? Do you use Dylan Radins? There's so many options that you have now that, I think the team is thrilled to be able to get a guy they were really high on and just solidify that left tackle, especially now knowing that they wanted to go with Tyler Shuck in the second round, a guy I've been high on throughout the process. And, one of the interesting things is, you move Trevor Penning into guard. One of the issues with a guy like Trevor Penning playing guard is he's like 6'8". You got to see over that guy. The Saints have spent two decades basically, throwing guys out there. You have to stand on their tippy toes to see over the offensive line. You had Tyler Shuck, he's 6'5". He's more of your traditional, prototypical quarterback build. He could see over that guy. It's not going to be an issue for him. So I do think that's interesting. And just kind of rolling into the Tyler Shuck conversation, I'm a big fan of Tyler Shuck. He was my mock draft pick when I put it out on Monday. I actually had the Saints trading up to go get him. I thought they were going to feel a little pressure. The way the quarterback class kind of unfolded, I think they felt a little more comfortable sitting there at 40. But they were very high on this guy. They did not feel like it was a reach. Yes, maybe he could have been available a few picks later, but you were not. If you wanted him, you were not going to say, we'll just kind of hold our water until 71. Let's wait 31 picks and hope no one agrees with us that this guy is a very good quarterback. So I think they're very happy with their first two picks.
Tell me what kind of quarterback he is. What's he remind you of for people that didn't see a lot of the highlights, don't know a lot about him from Louisville, Tyler Shuck, other than his name is going to be ridiculously hard to pronounce.
Yeah, so his name is spelled differently than it sounds. Mm-hmm. So that's the first thing people have to kind of figure
out. It's 9:30, and we're back with Jeff Nowak, WWL Saints sideline reporter, talking about Tyler Shuck. For people that aren't familiar with him, Jeff, you're getting ready to tell us. Susie, remind you of, give me some quarterback comparisons, and is he likely to play this year?
Yeah, I'm missing a lot. We're kind of cutting in and out. I don't know what the deal is. But, like you mentioned, he's 6'5". A lot of the criticism you'll hear is he's 26 years or he's 25 years old. He'll be 26 in his rookie season. I get it. But I don't think the Saints view that as an issue. I think they view that as a positive. He's going to show up and be a little more pro-ready. He's also has an injury history. His three seasons at Texas Tech, he broke his collarbone twice. He broke his fibula once. These are kind of freak injuries. They're not orthopedic injuries. They're kind of, okay, contact injuries. Texas Tech, he was asked to run a lot. He went to Louisville in a more pro-style offense. He wasn't asked to run as much. He didn't get hurt. So I don't think they're super concerned about that either. And the question to me becomes, okay, who is he as a quarterback? You know, he's a very mature quarterback. He understands, hey, I would rather throw the ball away than take a sack. That's something that, you know, has been criticized in college. But at the end of the day, that's a pro trait. Professional quarterbacks, guys who last in the NFL, understand that I am much better off cutting my losses, understanding when a play is dead, and dirting a ball than taking 5, 6, 8, 9 sacks a game. Watch how Spencer Rattler played last year versus how Derek Carr played last year.
Turning it over.
Yeah, and so, right. And so, like, I think that's something that they view as a positive trait. I kind of look at Jared Goff as kind of the top-end comparison, and I know some people are like, oh, Jared Goff. I mean, if you watch Jared Goff, like, that's a good comparison, right? This is a guy who threw for 4,700 yards last year. He's a four-time Pro Bowler. He's been to a Super Bowl, and we don't need to bring up how he got there. But, he was fifth in the MVP voting last year. And what Jared Goff does and what his superpower is he gets the ball out. He understands how to play from within the pocket. He can extend, but when he extends to throw. He can take off. I would say Tyler's a little more athletic than Jared. If you go back and watch his tape at Oregon, where he started, he backed up Justin Herbert for 2 years and then played during the COVID year. So it was only seven games in 2021, I guess. But, what he's able to do is when he gets out in a straight line, he can go. Now, he's not trying to juke people, make people miss downfield. He's going to get down rather than take a hit. But, he's a guy that can get out of the pocket and move. So, no, I mean, I think when people see him out there, they're gonna kind of get the picture of like, okay, I get it. You're talking about 6'5", strong arm. He's able to roll out of the pocket and make really good throws downfield. He's got a good ability to kind of throw from multiple arm slots. So you'll see him when needed to kind of drop down in kind of like a Matt Stafford-esque kind of like sidearm throw. He said Matt Stafford was a guy he came up watching a lot of. So you can see a little bit of that in his game. It's the number 40 pick in the draft. You're not taking a guy at number 3 and saying, well, this guy has to be a superstar. It was a terrible pick.
If you're ready for a new job, let Express Employment Professionals help you. Express is already hiring for summer jobs in a variety of industries. Job seekers never pay a fee at Express. Go to expresspros.com to find your location. That's expresspros.com.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
At MLBShop.com, you can get all the latest officially licensed merchandise for you and your family. But if you really want to level up your game, you can grab something for your dog walker, your Pilates instructor, your swim coach, your neighbor, your accountant, your gardener, your best friend, your bandmate, your boss, your kid's teacher, your mailman. Visit MLBShop.com and stock up on officially licensed on-field merchandise from your favorite teams.
Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
You're taking a guy at number 40 and saying, we feel good about it. And we'll see. I think he could very well be your week one starter, just like Bo Nix was the week one starter for Denver last year. It'll depend on whether Derek Carr is healthy and whether, and you go through camp and you say, who's the better quarterback? Is it Spencer Rattler? Is it Tyler Shuck? But I think Tyler's going to have a really, really, unless they're trying to protect him because they don't think he's ready. They don't think the team is ready around him. If he shows up and looks better than Spencer Rattler, there's no question you would throw him in there.
Let's talk about the rest of the Saints draft choices. Vernon Broughton?
Yep.
Tell me about it.
So Vernon's an interesting one. I would say when you talk about reaches of the draft, he might be the best answer in terms of the read on him at 71 was he probably would have been there at 93. The Saints really liked him. Defensive tackles are, you know, not easy to find in the mid rounds. If you feel like you have a guy that is a plug and play defensive tackle, you go get him. The Saints had really, really good intel on him. Bo Davis, who's the Saints defensive line coach now, obviously after a year at LSU, was the Texas defensive line coach for three seasons prior to that. So he coached Vernon. We asked Vernon about it. He loves Bo Davis. He said they're like family. If you go and you look at so the Saints post the draft calls when they call the guy and tell him he got picked. They actually had Bo make that call to tell Vernon he was coming to the Saints. He called him chicken legs, which I think is funny because when you see the guy, he's this massive human being. And he also said, he's like, you're my Easter basket. It's kind of like a joke, but it was, you know, I'm sure that one of the reasons Vernon is here is because Bo Davis gave him a very, very strong stamp of approval. So, you know, it's a position of need, and I like it.
Jonas Sanker, safety?
Jonas. It's actually Jonas like Valanciunas. Yes.
Okay.
You know, he's an interesting guy, too. You know, both him and Danny Stutzman, who was the next pick out of Oklahoma, Jonas was the final day two pick. Danny was the first day three pick. And what they have in common is both guys are elite tacklers. They are highly productive players. If you combine their stats over the last two seasons between Oklahoma and Virginia, they've combined for more than 400 tackles. Like these are guys who you can plug in as core special teamers from day one and feel like we can develop these guys. Jonas in particular is kind of fascinating because he actually came up playing eight-man football, which, you know, is really kind of a unique thing. Scott Shanley, former Saints linebacker, also came up playing eight-man football. Mm. We had him on WWL radio yesterday. He describes it as arena football without the arena. It's really high-paced, but you still got to go out there and make tackles. He played quarterback and safety in that situation, and he made some big hits that kind of got him on the scouts' radar, and then so he ends up at Virginia and is highly productive. So I think he's going to be a really intriguing guy. You know, I mean, C.J. Gardner-Johnson would be a good comparison in that same range in terms of the third, fourth round. But, yeah, I like both those two guys as core special teamers right away who can potentially, you know, DeMario Davis, as much as it seems like he's going to play forever, eventually he's going to have to call it a career. So you are still looking for inside linebackers, guys who can fill in. And so Danny, I think, is a really good candidate for that.
And I know you like the tight end from UCLA. I'm not going to even pretend to know how to pronounce his name. Say it.
Maliki Matavau. One more thing on Danny, which is interesting. Yeah. So Danny Stutzman's father, Steve, was actually a teammate of Jeff Ireland at Baylor. Okay. Jeff Ireland, the Saints assistant GM, was a kicker at Baylor. Steve was a tight end, which kind of leads, okay, so the tight end out of UCLA, Maliki Matavau. I actually talked to him at the Senior Bowl, and one of the things that stuck with me, and he was a mock draft pick of mine, so that's a, you know, mark it off. Anytime I can get a seventh round pick right, I feel pretty good about my mock draft. But yeah, one of the reasons I was really high on him is because when I talked to him at the Senior Bowl, I asked him, hey, what do you want to work on this week? What is the most important thing for you to come out here and do? And he said, I want to work on run blocking. I want to come out here and put my hand in the dirt and beat up some edge rushers. And, you know, that's to me what the Saints needed to add was not only a guy who can physically block, be that blocking tight end option, a guy who wants to do it, a guy who embraces it as his role. Because to me, you know, so much, yes, you want to have a guy with the physical traits to be an elite run blocker. But so much of that equation is wanting to go out there and do it, wanting to get isolated with a defensive end who's probably going to make you look bad, but surviving and putting in the work to make it happen. And so if you can get a guy with the traits, he's 6'6", 250, pretty athletic, a little stiff in his hips, kind of stiff getting downfield, but that's not really what I'm going to be asking him to do. When I can get a guy with the traits I need in the seventh round, 248 overall, I feel good about it. So I think it was a solid kind of late round value pick for him.
Thank you, Jeff. I appreciate it as always. And Stutzman, I'm surprised didn't go higher. You?
Stutzman?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's an interesting guy because he didn't get a lot of interest. The Saints were the only team that worked him out.
I just remember watching him play, and I thought he'd go up there. We'll see. Thank you, Jeff. Appreciate it. We'll take a break. Come back. Talk to Dr. Judy Ho about handling stress and finding the sweet part of life, even though sometimes it can be sour right now. Traffic, WWL. Hi, 944, 16 till 10. We're very concerned about mental health here, and every other Tuesday we talk to our friend Dr. Judy Ho, clinical and forensic neuropsychologist, host of the Supercharged Life podcast and several books. How are you, Dr. Judy?
Doing great. How are you, Tommy?
I'm well, thank you. I know a lot of stuff is going on in the world, and a lot of people are having a hard time finding joy, or they're worried about this or worried about that. So we thought we'd talk about, and I'm looking at an article of Psychology Today, how to feel more joy even when the world feels heavy. And for a lot of people, the world does feel heavy, whether it's from a macro or a micro standpoint.
Yeah, you know, such a relevant topic. And I would say that it really has to do a lot with your mindset and also what you choose to consume. I definitely notice a difference. If I consume a bit too much negative news, it really does color my mood the rest of my day, and even sometimes have nightmares related to, in theme, some of what I just consumed or read. And so, of course, you want to stay informed. You want to make sure that you are being practical and that you're being grounded and you're staying in touch with things. But at the same time, so much of our thoughts are colored by what we're exposed to. And if to the point that you have any choice over the matter, you need to have more balanced consumption of information. And that means also spending time consuming positive and helpful information that makes you feel good.
Yeah, you know, Dr. Judy, I totally agree with you. And sometimes, you know, you can find yourself, I don't know if you want to call it doom scrolling or whatever, but you see, you know, stuff is going on that you don't necessarily agree with. You see one thing, you see another, you see another, another. And then before you know it, you find yourself spiraling. And it's like, wait, how did I get here? And again, if I had never seen any of that, I would never know about any of it, right?
Exactly. And yeah, that's right. I was thinking about the term doom scrolling as well. Mm-hmm. And I think that most of the times what you want to do is, you know, you of course want to stay in touch, but it's really just about setting a little time limit for yourself, right? 10 minutes. Or if you know that you already struggle with sleep, don't be reading those things in bed on your phone right before you go to bed. You know, you might want to read them in the middle of the day or something, and then buffer that with an activity you're going to do to get yourself off reading those articles. So maybe 10 minutes before you're supposed to have a meeting or have a lunch, you know, you to spend 10 minutes getting up to date and informed. And then, you know, you have something that's already buffered on the back end where you have to get to. And then that's your natural stop, right? But I think the hardest thing is when people read really negative information right before they go to bed or right when they wake up, because your first moments when you wake up are so important for setting the tone of the day. That's the time when you should be doing a quick gratitude exercise or reading an inspirational quote. You don't want to start your morning consuming negative information and feeding negative energy.
I got a couple of texts coming in here. I'm going to combine them. One of them says, I tried to live in the moment, but what do you do when the moment sucks? And somebody else says, my significant other tells me happiness is a choice, but I don't think it is. Thoughts on all of that, Dr. Judy?
Yeah, you know, I really think that it is really hard sometimes when you're struggling with something and you're trying to find the positive. And I think to that point, it's not so much about finding joy in that particular struggle, but even just doing a quick gratitude exercise of, but what am I appreciative for? Even though this present moment sucks 98% of the time, is there something small that I can still say, I'm thankful for this? You know, that's one way. And then the other way is to struggle less with that particular reality. I think sometimes when we're in a negative moment, you're thinking about all the ways you wish it was different, but if you truly cannot change that moment because it's just a sucky moment and it is what is happening, it's really just about letting that go and saying, well, this is what's happening. The more you struggle with it, the more it's actually going to be painful and hurtful to you. So what can you do to have radical acceptance? And I know we have very little time, so we can't get into this concept, which I think is a life-changing concept if you can actually embrace it. But it's look it up if you guys want to. Go Google radical acceptance. It's from dialectical behavior therapy. And it's really about, hey, you know you can't change it. The moment sucks. But it's almost basically saying, yet I still surrender and accept this reality, and I'm going to do the things that I can do to improve the moment or to improve my life, even if it can improve hugely upon this big thing that I'm upset about.
Is that the same as stoicism or not really?
No, stoicism, I think it can have, you know, obviously some benefits. Mm-hmm. If you do too much stoicism, you might be ignoring your problems. It's a little different. Radical acceptance is really just about embracing the fact that you can't change things. Really weird, right? It's very Buddhist in a way. Like, mm-hmm. oh, well, like, you're going to just let your life be. And I think when you truly assess and you know you can't actually change what's happening, then that really causes you more peace. Because you know that it's not something that you could have done or should have done. But most of the time, people struggle with that, right? Like, oh, what if I just made this other decision? Or what if I wasn't feeling this way or this wasn't happening to me? And that just creates more struggle with whatever it is that you're going on, so that it actually makes the situation harder rather than either letting it be or hopefully making it slightly better.
What about happiness being a choice?
I do think that to some degree, happiness is a choice. There are some studies that show that happiness is part genetic, part personality-based, and part situational, right? So sometimes the situation is going to cause you to not feel super happy. However, if you have certain perspectives, outlooks, the way that your personality is formed, those are some things that can buffer it. And then the other part, which is about 40 to 50% of the components of happiness, is what you do and your outlook, right? So you have these little breakdowns where, okay, situationally, this is what's going on. Maybe there's some genetic pros and cons in terms of your general disposition, but about half of it is up to you. And I find that to be very encouraging. So even if somebody who has had clinical depression, where depression runs in their family, maybe their personality and outlook is just a bit more realistic, so they're not necessarily like a positive outlook person. But even for that individual, 50% of your happiness comes from what you choose to consume, the activities you do, how you choose to connect with people, and how you want to alter your thinking so that it's more balanced. All of those things can really help. And so I definitely think that it's important. It's a good lesson that there is so much that we can do to contribute to our own joy.
A text comes in. How important is it to have something to look forward to?
100% important. And that's why people say, you know, sometimes planning a vacation, planning a mental health break, it's almost as enjoyable, if not more enjoyable, than actually going on that vacation or finally taking that day off. And I really agree with that. So allow yourself to savor future experiences. Create things that you can look forward to. Do things that are meaningful to you. I like to create a joy list, and I have one of these, and I need to update it, actually. It's been a couple months, where essentially it's my top 10 to 20 items or things that, you know, they take varying amounts of time. Some are like just having a wonderful cup of coffee. That takes 5 minutes, and it's a source of joy for me. And then, of course, planning and going on a vacation, that's on the bigger end. But essentially, your joy list should be things that you find meaningful and that bring you happiness and that are essentially of different types of time commitments and resources. And just committing that you're going to look at this joy list every day and every couple of days try to do at least one thing. That goes a long way in cultivating your joy, and it does accumulate. So the more you have joyful moments, the happier overall you will become. It's kind of like dropping, you know, coins in the piggy bank. And so they all add up, and over time, you're going to really see the difference. But also in the moment, you're going to feel the difference.
And only a minute or two left, but something, if you can, Dr. Judy, about doing something for somebody else, because I know sometimes that's a good way to get out of your funk, by doing something for somebody else. You feel better about everything and you don't necessarily dwell on yourself.
I think that is such a underestimated source of joy. I know that when I'm going through personal challenges, the best thing that I can do is connect with somebody else, help somebody else. Even when I go to work, if I have stuff going on, I'm worried about something, I go to work and immediately I'm immersed in trying to help somebody else. And it's amazing how mindful you can be when you're helping somebody else and how much that adds to even your own gratitude, because it really puts things in perspective and it brings joy to the other person. So you're passing that along and that makes you feel good and another person as well.
Thank you, Doc. Appreciate your time as always. Dr. Judy Ho, clinical forensic neuropsychologist, host of Supercharged Life Podcast. We'll find out what Newell's got planned for us when we come back on WWL.
Every morning brings a fresh new energy. And no matter what the day holds, we come to the Today Show for all of it.
We get the best start to the day because we start it together.
Watch the Today Show weekdays at 7 a.m. on NBC.